I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Yesterday, a lot of conversation was, I mean, it was a star-studded event. You had Deshaun Watson talking yesterday. You had Kevin Stefanski talking yesterday. Both had to speak about Amari Cooper. He's no longer here. He has flown the coop, Tone. Nothing?
Okay.
All right, we're moving on. Yeah. Then on the show, you had Albert Breer in the afternoon. Not on our show, but on Afternoon Drive. You had Albert Breer. You had Mike Sando, Ross Tucker, everybody came into Cleveland or Cleveland Radio to speak about these Cleveland Browns. And thank God Kevin got to be asked about Nick Chubb so he could wax poetically about one of the all-time great Browns. I mean, what we witnessed there is one of the all-time great Browns who's ever played. Boy, I wonder where he would rank in a top 10. I don't want to do that now, but let that percolate with everybody. If you were going to rank the all-time Browns, where does Nick Chubb rank? Because they've had a lot of great offensive players. Defensively, like Myles Garrett, you're seeing the best defensive player in Browns history in Myles Garrett. But with Nick, all right, where does he rank among the greatest? Because they've had some really great offensive players for their football team. But then there was obviously the conversation that was going on around Deshaun Watson. And you had something you had noticed. And it wasn't even from what Kevin had said or what Deshaun Watson had said. Tone, you took something from Albert Breer yesterday on Afternoon Drive. Take
it away. Yeah, because we've kind of alluded to this from one of the first games Deshaun Watson had played. And we never know. We're not behind the scenes. We're not really watching practice. They don't even really allow media to watch the practice in its entirety. So we never know how the interactions are between coaching staff and the players. But I found this really interesting hearing Albert Breer doing his weekly yesterday on the afternoon show, because maybe confirmed what I already thought is a little too strong, but it's leaning into being a pretty accurate representation of how I felt this was going all along.
I really hope that someone's also having hard conversations with Deshaun Watson on all this, because, you know, they tiptoed around a lot of stuff with him. Like, I know, like, one of the reasons he was so successful in Houston early on is because they took a real tough love approach with him. They had his trust. They were hard on him, and there was a lot of growth because of it. I do wonder, are they being hard enough on Deshaun himself? Because I think right now that's what he needs.
Kenny, it's something that we have talked about on this show, but we don't know. We're not there. We only see the product on the field. And sometimes it's dangerous to draw direct lines, to just assume because the outcome is one way that they're doing something wrong another way. But I imagine Albert Breer didn't concoct that out of thin air. He is somebody who has a lot of agent friends in the league. He's somebody that has people in every building in the league, and for him to openly wonder like that, are they coaching Deshaun Watson? Are they telling him what he needs to hear? Are they giving him tough love? Are they really doing that? Because we've kind of suggested that we don't know if he is.
Well, you can't. Some guys aren't always going to be pushed by quote-unquote tough love. Like, what's tough love? Like, everybody says they like to be coached hard, and then a lot of people in practice
don't like to
be coached
hard. Bill Belichick and Tom Brady is the toughest love for so many. The first 10 years,
yes.
Brady said he was miserable. He said they would sit there and agonize over footwork, every last drop of it. Now, maybe the last 10 years, Brady kind of got away with what he wanted to get away with his trainers and everything. But the actual coaching, I mean, Bill was hard on Tom Brady. Are the Browns hard on Deshaun Watson? The way they talk about Deshaun,
no.
They don't treat him as the worst, statistically the worst quarterback over the last 5 years.
Do they need to be hard on him, though?
Yes.
Do they? No. Why do you want him to be hard on him?
Why would I want a coach to be hard on a player
Why do you want the Browns to be hard on Deshaun Watson? Why do you want that?
Well, I'd like them to be fair on a quarterback, and if the quarterback's not doing what he's being coached, mm-hmm. then you got to be hard on the coach on the player.
Okay.
And he clearly is not running the offense. But if he can't run the offense a fraction of what Joe Flacco could at times, DTR, PJ, what was it, PJ Walker. PJ Walker. I didn't even know his name. And yet
TJ Hooker.
And yet I feel better about the way they coached him than they coached Deshaun Watson.
All right.
Like, yeah, they're not being hard on him, and they need to be hard on him.
That's specifically the point. That's why you have to wonder who is making the decision to start this man. So let me point this out to you. I'm not fighting you yet, all right? This ain't a fight. Not yet, anyway. You want him to coach him hard. What if he just doesn't respond to that? I said it before. Does he or does he not look like a basket case out there?
Yeah.
So me yelling at him, is that going to make anything better? Me getting red-faced and vitriolic is that going to make the situation any better?
So basically saying there's no way to coach him what you're saying. There's no way to get through to him.
There may not be that possibility to it. Like, that's what, like, remember Charles Robinson last week, we played that audio of him on Pro Football Talk, and there were a couple of things that were said back when they first went and got him that we didn't really want to discuss because it was uncomfortable at that time, where, boy, he's looking over to the sidelines during practice and looking to Bill O'Brien, and maybe Bill O'Brien was covering some things more than what we really thought he was covering. Like, that was one of the big discussions that Charles Robinson had put out there last week. So now you move on to this week, and Albert Breer's asking this, and I'm thinking, if you know you don't have a choice in the matter to sit him, or you know that he is not going to, and he's not going to respond positively to quote-unquote tough coaching, whatever that may be, because you can yell, but you have to teach. That's what people get mixed up on. You got to be able to teach. You can get loud, but you have to be able to get through, because if you're not teaching, then you're just yelling and nobody's getting any better. So that tough coaching, quote-unquote, is he going to respond to that, or is this just a fruitless enterprise all the way through? Yes.
Does the tough coaching and him responding or not matter when you're 1-5? Who cares? Coach him tough.
No. But that's
like
the point.
If he's not going to respond to the tough coaching, who cares? You're 1-5. You got to try something.
But that's the point. Maybe they've tried it already. They might have tried it already. And if it ain't going to go through and you have no choice but to play this guy.
Well, we know.
Like, I don't have
answers.
If they
tried it already, would we be hearing stuff like this from Albert Breer?
Yeah. Why wouldn't you?
No, I don't. Kenny.
Why wouldn't you?
I got to be honest.
Albert Breer said he doesn't think they're coaching him, right?
The way they've talked about Deshaun Watson from day one here, and I illustrated it, and I got made fun of at the time, but when they gave him a game ball for the win against Washington when he threw for 160 yards, completed eight passes, he was terrible that game. He got a game ball for it.
So
they have been walking on eggshells to prop this decision up for the better part of 2.5 years.
Guys, where's Alex Van Pelt at right now?
New England?
Did he try it? Did he try it? Was there a moment maybe last year? This is speculating. Nobody's told me a word. I will be open and honest about that. I know we like to leave Easter eggs out there. Was there a point where maybe something was said and there was some frustration involved where it's like, hey, man, we got this 30-something-year-old QB that used to play for the Ravens that used to be good. It's off the trash pile right now, quote-unquote, coming off the couch, and he's out there throwing for 300 yards and we're going to the playoffs. Meanwhile, you're over here doing God knows what. Maybe something was said and they didn't really like it because they know what the contract situation is. That's speculative. I have no idea. But you had coaches. You had a guy like Stump Mitchell. Stump Mitchell's one of the all-time hard asses. Stump Mitchell's gone. So, I have to believe that the way he's played in 3 years, yeah, maybe there was a point like, hey, enough of this goofy stuff. Get your ass out there and let's get going.
Well,
there might have been stuff like that.
We never
saw. And they might not have liked that.
With, like, the levels of frustration, like Stefanski, there was a point in time, I think it was either late second early second quarter, where they came out of commercial break. And it's just supposed to be the typical cutaway shot of the head coach. Here is two-time coach of the year. And he is furious. We haven't even run a play yet on the series. And he's already mad.
That's as animated as he's been in 5 years.
We didn't see that the first 2 years. So obviously there's a lot more reason to be angrier now. But we've never seen a tough interaction on the sidelines with Stefanski and Deshaun until most recently over the last few weeks. We have not seen that the first 2 years. I wondered, and this was an unintended consequence of giving him the guaranteed money, that that first year where he only played, you know, half the season, they thought he was going to be able to play more games. Obviously, the NFL intervened.
He played six games each year.
Yeah. And then the second, unfortunately, he goes down with the injury. But I wonder if an unintended consequence of him getting that money is they felt they had to walk on eggshells around him because he was going to have the most power in the organization. And only because he's played so poorly does he have zero power in the organization. But if you think about it, guys of his stature, right? Like, guys that make the most amount of money at one point in the league or the highest cap hit, whatever you want to say, they get to dictate, hey, I want that receiver. I want this play in the offense. I want this. I want this. I want this. And now looking at Deshaun Watson, like, he doesn't even look capable of being able to demand those things.
And that's what I'm saying. It's common sense. There's coaches out there who have common sense. And maybe it was Van Pelt. Maybe it was Stump Mitchell. Maybe it was Bill Callahan, for all we know, sitting there going, what are we doing here? You're trading for all these different wide receivers. You're trying to do all these different things. Maybe the guy just doesn't have it anymore. Well, we've made a $230 million investment that's guaranteed of it. We can let go of some people, but we can't let go of him right now. And they were obviously, because it's a best laid plan in the wintertime, they were going to let those guys go and keep Deshaun Watson. Well, now 7 weeks into the season, it looks like maybe they should have just held on to those guys and let go of Deshaun Watson. But again, you can't do it, so it's a fruitless effort. So yeah, they probably tried to coddle him a little, and well, coddle him a lot. They made him a captain. Okay, well, who's the one who has to give the pregame speeches? It's the backup quarterback, for crying out loud. They took the C off of Nick Chubb's chest to do so, by the way, and everybody is going to be emotional in the state when Nick Chubb comes back, and then they're going to kick off and they're going to boo the quarterback. Okay. And we're also in our minds trying to say that there's addition by subtraction letting go of Amari Cooper. That's going to help out Deshaun Watson. All
right. What Breer said at the start of that clip,
I don't blame you for trying anything, because it is, it's a prison sentence, so you got to try something.
When he talked about Bill O'Brien, and one thing that they did over there very early on was tough love, and because they thought he could take it. And he obviously did. played.
Bill O'Brien does not come from a system or has never given me the vibe of fuzzy, friendly type of coach, right?
No. So I wonder if we're always wondering, like, you bring up sarcastically all the time, is Kevin Stefanski the only coach who needs bad quarterbacks? No, it's not that. I mean, you're being sarcastic to prove a point.
Extremely sarcastic.
But maybe this is the one glaring weakness in Stefanski, and maybe the way that he coaches, not just the players, but his staff, is maybe they don't do that. Maybe tough love is not where he excels at. Maybe he needs other guys like Callahan.
History would show
who's working with an offensive line. What did we hear from Wyatt Teller on the way out for Bill Callahan? Like, yeah, it actually wasn't much fun to play for him.
This is the same team that 2 years ago let it come to blows almost after a game with Jadeveon Clowney and then left him on the roster for six more weeks. So you are not wrong about that.
And we love Kevin. It's not been a good year, obviously. He hasn't coached very good at all this year. We've seen him coach really well.
My voice cracks. I love Kevin.
But this has been a fly in the ointment maybe of the Kevin Stefanski era, is that maybe he's not equipped. Forget about X's and O's and the actual diagramming of plays. He can do all that with his eyes closed, with his hands tied behind his back. Maybe it's the way that he manages. Because we've had those blow-ups, whether it was Odell Beckham and what was going on behind the scenes there. Maybe it was, like you just said, but with Jadeveon Clowney stuff, we've had those issues, and maybe that's where our coach falls short.
We've said it so many times before. He's a manager. You need it's an emotional game, and you need emotional leadership from the leaders in the locker room who are on the team. And if they can't get it from the prime position, you are still going to have a problem with that. You can't do it. Miles can give all the speeches he wants, and I'm glad to hear that he is. He's still got to have that guy on offense lead it, and they're going to have problems if they don't. And he can't back up with the play to lead any of that right now, because he's played terribly. Historically bad.
Now the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima give their thoughts on what you might have missed about last night.
Well, Amari Cooper no longer here. Kenny, might he have flown the coop? Well, you liked it better when he did it?
He didn't like it either time.
Yeah. That's why we had to balance it out.
Yeah.
It's a fair show. Fair and balanced show.
Mitch, you want to take a shot at
it? Mitch, go ahead. What did Cooper do?
He flew the coop.
Boom.
That
was
the worst one.
I thought he had confidence and delivered it.
I thought Mitch's actually was the best.
Yeah. By the way, you missed it. Mitch answering the phones? This is a very different voice, very different demeanor.
What's he sound like?
He was in charge, man.
Is it like 92.3 The Fan? Good morning. How's he sound? Tell us how you answer the phone.
Daniel Day-Lewis.
Owen was blown away.
92.3 The Fan. I drink your
Tell him about the milkshakes.
I've abandoned the call.
Anywho, Amari Cooper, no longer a Cleveland Brown. And Kevin Stefanski, his now former head coach, was asked, gee, coach, how are you going to make up for the loss of his production?
I think it's a bunch of guys. I think, as you know, Amari's volume of targets was a lot. Well, those have to go to other people. So other people in the wide receiver room, the tight end room, the running back room, what have you. But we do have a lot of confidence in our guys.
They do got to go to other people. Will they get to other people, though, is the question, Kev.
Deshaun, don't throw the ball. Don't throw the ball to Amari Cooper anymore. That would not be the guy to do it.
They got to go to some people, yeah. Well, what happened there, Coach? He's thrown to Amari. Well, Amari hasn't been here in 3 weeks. I know. That's the part of the problem, sir.
All right. Now, I heard.
Deshaun, in the third quarter, you threw it into the flats. No one was there. What was your reason?
Saw Amari.
Called the Cooper play, damn it. Stop. Get rid of the Cooper page of the playbook.
You laugh now, but you wait. When we're still playing him in a month, well, he's still throwing to Amari Cooper. And that's part of the problem.
All right. So. You know, Jerry Jeudy, we had said just a couple weeks ago, Jerry Jeudy was the best wide receiver that we had seen this year. Now, it was a very low bar, and it wasn't a lot of production to go around. Jerry Jeudy, you're not going to get the big yards after the catch or anything like that, but he was pretty sure-handed until really the last few weeks. Now, he has 248 yards on the year. He's right now, the math doesn't really add up to him having massive year. But
it doesn't sound good, but it looks good.
Can he now start to look like a number one wide receiver with the absence of Amari?
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Amari Cooper. Might his chemistry with Deshaun Watson help him start to make the passing game look a little better?
I'll answer your question with a question.
Go ahead.
Who's throwing to him?
Right now, it's Deshaun Watson this week.
And the answer is no.
Kenny, they hooked up one time for 35 yards last week.
Great.
Against Washington.
I'll have fond memories.
Oh, all of a sudden you're going to forget about Washington where he had the one catch for 16 yards?
Hey, this is not anti-Jeudy. I'm not new. Well, I have nothing against you. From what I've got to see out of Jerry Jeudy this year, I've liked Jerry Jeudy. No.
Well, Jerry Jeudy.
I'm not going to go after Jerry Jeudy.
Jerry
at least
Jeudy's
not yet.
Going to be the number one target the rest of the year. The question is,
I'm still convinced it'll still be Amari Cooper.
Well, regardless of who the quarterback is next year, is Jeudy going to be the number one wide receiver when they kick off week one next year?
I don't know. Probably.
They got an extra third round pick this year. You know they're taking
right.
a third round receiver.
We can take another water heater.
So. It was,
roll his ass down the sideline.
I didn't even ask you about...
Can you roll him in a post? Oh, we can try.
I didn't even ask you about Cedric Tillman. What does this mean for Cedric Tillman? You gotta take some of these seriously,
more
Ken.
More jet sweeps. Give me more of them.
More.
This is what people who were sitting at Gallagher were thinking in the 80s, man. Just laughing the whole show. Because you got me in stitches right now. This is great. What's it mean for Cedric Tillman? I don't know. Take your guess.
Meanwhile... Nick Chubb.
You go have him park cars across the street from Progressive Field today. Give me the same output right now.
Folks, Nick Chubb is back. He was a full participant in practice yesterday as he makes his triumphant return from that horrific injury he sustained against the Steelers in week two a season ago. So he was asked about how he is going to build confidence that he can be the great Nick Chubb again.
I think just because I've been through it before, and I knew what to expect, I knew how to go about it, I think that definitely helped me, and also just the support I've had with the trainers here, the strength coaches here, my people back home, doctors at University Hospital. I think all that just gave me confidence in myself.
He's the best.
He is awesome.
He is the
best. He is the one beacon of light in this otherwise miserable season. Outside of like, okay, Myles Garrett.
Miles is a beacon of light.
And JOK is still running around making huge plays.
Yeah.
Even in some of these losses.
Oh, gosh. Get out your flashlights. I'll do a beacon of light right now.
Let's go.
Give me my depth chart. Hold on. Busk while I find my depth chart. Here we are.
Right.
I'm trying to think who else. Bajorquez?
Do you have any song?
The beacons
of
light?
He actually turned on his flashlight. Like, people can see it in there.
Oh, yeah. Beacons of light,
Good job on you, Mitch. All right. Beacons of light. Here we go. Joel Bitonio.
Still?
Yeah.
Is he having a good season?
It's gotten better. But, you know, he's when you're out there on an island, you got five attacking you. David Njoku, beacon of light. Yes. Yes. Yes.
It's not his fault. He's just been banged up that he hasn't been able to be.
Okay, so we have
David
a flicker
Njoku
going on there. Jerry Jeudy, beacon of light.
Been okay.
All right, so that does it for the offense. Myles Garrett, beacon of light.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah, beacon of light.
Yep.
Denzel Ward, beacon of light.
Yeah, I say so, still.
Grant Delpit, beacon of light.
And again, he was injured. But I will say this.
Grant Delpit, beacon of light.
Delpit's been pretty good.
It's looking like the Castle Rock thing at the end of Seinfeld now, guys.
1,000 points of light right now.
We got it going on. Ronnie Hickman, Rodney McLeod, beacon of light.
Yes.
Thank you very much. Dustin Hopkins, beacon of light.
I know he missed the extra point.
Corey Bohorquez, beacon of light.
Yes, 100%.
Rex Sunahara, beacon of light.
You know what? Bay Village guy. Of course. He is.
Local guy. Bet your ass.
What is it about Bay Village and special teams?
So
a
you got,
special community.
You got Nick Chubb right there. That's seven right there. Yeah, boy, there's something in the water that makes them very special there, that they're all special teams.
Series from Anthony Lyman.
The water is right there, Kenny. That is the beauty of living in this waterfront village, that I live very far away from the water. meanwhile, we are getting ready for a pivotal and a must-win game three. I think we all would agree where tonight, really 5 o'clock. I love the start time.
This
Matthew
afternoon.
Boyd.
Oh, it's a great time.
Is going to be toeing the rubber, and he was asked how he's feeling.
I don't know how it's going to feel, but I know what I'm going to do, and that's kind of the way I approach it, right? Like, my game is my game. However I feel, whether it's super excited or the lead block in my stomach, I'll be happy for it, and I'll just go out there and go do what, you know, I know I'm going to do when the ball's in my hand.
Sounded pretty damn confident, no?
Yeah.
Do you
have confidence? He needs to be confident. Yeah, I actually do have a lot of confidence in Matthew Boyd. As long as you don't pull him after an inning and
right
a third.
Right now, he's the only starting pitcher I have confidence on.
Isn't it amazing? This is really stupid. The way baseball works, especially the playoffs, it's really stupid to make a statement, the likes of which I'm going to say.
Go ahead.
The first two innings is everything tonight. If we can actually have a lead after two innings, we're winning this game, and we're going to cut into that lead,
right,
and we are going to seize control, or at least have a chance to seize control of the series. If they're down 3-0 again after two innings, and they're going to the bullpen, it's done.
Why even have Jason Stanford on the station when we have bits like that that we can use?
I'm sorry. You can't boot around the stupid baseball, and all of a sudden you're down. You're just gifting that team runs. This team that I am not blown away with, and I will maintain, I am not. This isn't a sore loser. This isn't a loser's lament. It's not like, oh, the Yankees. Like, they're not that good. This Yankee team, of the Yankee teams of the last 25 years in the playoffs, where does this one rank of all their playoff teams? Not up there. Not up there with any of the best.
I don't know. Mitch is the one who knows Yankees history.
Oh,
ask Mitch.
Perfect. Yankee.
I don't know.
Where are they?
Where are they, Mitch?
It's definitely not with the early 2000s teams and the late 90s teams, and maybe not even 2009.
We're not just talking through it, Mitch. Let's go.
Yeah, power rank them.
I mean, like all the teams ever, or just the ones I just said?
Last 25 years, playoff teams.
Number one, 98. Number two, 99. Number three, 2009.
So you just picked all the World Series teams?
Yeah.
All right.
There wasn't a diamond in the rough team that really should have won the World Series. It didn't.
I mean, the 2001 team I thought was going to win.
Wow, of course.
Didn't we all?
You're 27. What do you mean you thought the 2001 team was going to win?
I was paying attention back then.
You were?
Yep. My one-year-old self watching Yankee games on Yes Network. Didn't even exist back then. I don't even know.
I don't know. You're the Yankee fan. You tell me.
We do have one final note.
What's
ceremonial first pitchers at Progressive Field. Game three, Jason Kipnis. Game four, Travis Hafner. Game five, Ryan Merritt.
Well, there's three of them.
Well, from what Merritt did in 2016.
Yeah.
I mean, where were they if they didn't have him stepping up in a huge way? So, on behalf of that, I'm going Merritt one. I'm going Kipnis two, Hafner three. No slight to Hafner. It's a power rank. Somebody's got to be third.
It should be last in power ranking.
Bob Wickman, all three games.
That's it for about last.
Cedric Tillman,
not
third
for
game.
Power ranking, though. We'll do it four more times today.
Poor Cedric Tillman. I'm sorry, young man. It's not your fault. Not your fault. I feel bad now. Is that it?
For about last night?
Yeah. I can hear you drinking your coffee. You sound good. Sounds like it's tasty. Austin Hedges, ladies and gentlemen. Manager in the making. No excitement there? Come on.
Well, I'd rather have you say ALCS hero in the making.
I feel bad for him. Like, I was listening yesterday.
Austin Hedges, contact hitter in the making.
Yeah.
You know, that's the beauty of baseball.
It can happen.
Like, he's Andrew Sendejo when he's out there on the field. Well, excuse me. No, because he's good at defense, so I don't know what to make him out to be. But go with me on this. Like, if you're going to go ripping people, like, there's definitely an advantage he gives you over Bo Naylor defensively. If I'm going to rip on anybody for not being able to hit, I guess I'm going to have to go with Bo Naylor. I mean, they got into it with a couple of callers yesterday in the 6 o'clock hour. It was really good stuff. Jason Stanford and Peterlin yesterday as I was getting ready for the preview show. And somebody made a hell of an argument. They're like, hey, like, it just sucks that once we know we're going to pinch hit for Bo Naylor, that Austin Hedges is going to come in and have to hit at some point. And I'm thinking, yeah, you know, that feeling sucks. But I just find the defense on the Joey Cantillo stuff borderline unforgivable.
Right?
Just borderline unforgivable. And the Emmanuel Clase 3-run home run, you know, I know Emmanuel's got to throw it. I understand that. But damn it, like the setups and anything, like, are you paying attention? Are you paying attention to what they might throw their bat at or anything like that? Like, this stuff just doesn't seem to happen with Austin. And I know one guy's in his 30s and one guy's in his early 20s, so he can make a difference. So I can get that argument, but I don't want to sit there and rip on a guy who clearly is part of the reason this team has been able to keep their heads in it the entire season. Like, I give him that benefit of the doubt. It sucks when he goes up there and strikes out with the bases loaded. I have to grant you that, but I'm not... I know what we're going into when it comes to him. I get more frustrated over Bo Naylor with that type of thing.
Well, just between the two of them, the trade-off is you don't trust either of them at the plate right now in the playoffs. Neither one of them have done a thing.
But
so you're going to go with
the one that I'm thinking about, though, is when we're at the plate early in a game is, well, the young guy, at least, if he does somehow get the bat on the ball, he can probably leg one out and maybe get you a double out of it. Maybe he can do something on the base pass, even though, you know, it's not like Bo Naylor's a speedster out there that's just stealing bases. But still, he can hit one over the fence. I've seen him do that. Austin Hedges has hit, I don't know what his career home run totals are, but it's not high.
But you could tell. This is why I kind of laugh when immediately after any playoff game, we go right to the managing of the losing team. This is not unique to Cleveland. It happens everywhere. But it's not like he has two great choices to choose from. How many times do you have to hear anybody who really follows us closely say, well, if David Fry could catch this, a lot of this would be a moot point. It would change so much of the dynamic of the lineup.
It would.
Like, we can all be honest here. If you were sizing up which lineup and what assets, you know, you would rather have if you were a manager, like, yeah, you'd pick the Yankees lineup. They have less tough choices, less difficult choices to make than what Vogt has to make. And so that's why I always think of that before we go and pile on to Vogt immediately after a playoff loss.
So let me throw this by you guys, and I'm going to get to the phones here in a second, because it's, you know, what's it going to take to get back in this series? And I wanted to play a Boyd clip, but I got something different now to think about. Would you be willing to, since he's good at defense? I mean, we have pulled pitchers after an inning and a third. Now, some of that is, you know, Brian Rocchio with the bobble, things like that. Would you be willing to put Hedges behind the plate with Matthew Boyd to start things off? Because I'm thinking, you know, Matthew Boyd's going to have to go at least four innings. Right? To give you a chance to win this game?
Are you pitch hitting for him at some
point? Well, it's not just this game. Yeah. It's the series, because you remember, we play back-to-back.
You're not pinch hitting from us.
No, if I'm pitch hitting for the catching spot at some point in the game, then I can't start the game with Austin Hedges, because I can't end the game with Bo Naylor behind the plate. I've got to end the game with one of those two guys behind the plate.
But it seems that in every single scenario, Tone, it seems like in every single scenario, it's been more important for the guy at the dish instead of the guy at the plate, with the exception of giving up a 3-run bomb to Kerry Carpenter. So yeah, that's a big one there.
I understand what Owen's thinking too. The thought is, if you have enough games, eventually Bo Naylor is going to get a hit. Right? I mean, isn't that kind of what you would say over Austin Hedges?
You say that, but it's been since, what, September 9th?
I know. I just think like the Austin Hedges, and of course he comes up with the bases loaded. Of course, what else is new? Not like I would have felt better about Naylor in that situation either. But we know what the outcome is every single time with Hedges in a very, very big spot.
The only thing you can do right now is slide that spot down to ninth. But Rocchio is doing so well in that spot. And I know
all the Darrys
come on the show, and I agree with him. Maybe you put Rocchio in the two spot right now.
I think
now.
You might see some movement like that because he is somebody who's making pitchers work. He's at least seeing a lot of pitches. So when you think about that grind and making sure to break a pitcher's rhythm, not let him get off. I mean, game one was really brutal because you made their guy look like a Cy Young Award winner.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he pitched better than Cole.
Mm-hmm.
216-474-0092. Like, that's kind of where I'm at right now. Because if I know that Austin Hedges calms down the entire pitching staff and does a great job, I gotta get through more than an inning with my starting pitcher tonight. Matthew Boyd's a really good pitcher. He's done well since he's come back from the injury. And he seems like a confident man. I gotta have him go a little longer than an inning or an inning and a third. I gotta have four innings out of the guy.
Can we do a bright spot on Boyd right now?
Please.
He's pitched twice in the playoffs.
Yes.
He's one of them. He didn't go as long, right, in game five. But he's drawn Skubal both times. He's not going against the Cy Young winner this time.
And he certainly didn't back down. It wasn't like he was intimidated by that match.
Cole Schmidt. 216.
I'll take Matthew Boyd in this matchup today.
Clark Schmidt. 216-474-0092. All right, I want to get your guys' thoughts on this. What's it going to take to get back into this series?
Well, I think early.
How long's Matt Boyd got to go? Would you start Austin Hedges or is that heresy?
It's an early lead.
I'll listen to it.
This is more of a kind of a bigger picture thing, not really associated with like the lineup or anything. It's just as simple. Like they need to get a lead so big, especially the first to three back-to-back-to-back games, that you're at home. You get off to an early lead. Now the pressure. You haven't really put a ton of pressure on the Yankees outside of, you know, loading them up and a lot of traffic against Cole. And they somehow limited the damage and they end up winning the game. And they could all breathe a sigh of relief collectively in New York. Now you're back in our place. And just if the top of the order can get off to a good start, make them work a little bit. Make them work. Make them earn it. And that doesn't mean, you know, dropping can of corn pop flies, like routine pop flies and making those critical mistakes. Because one thing you obviously can't do is fall behind again and have to rely on the bullpen. Because even if you win this game, if you go deep into the bullpen tonight, what do you got left for the next two games? I mean, there's no rest.
I want to hear from you guys right now. 216-474-0092. What's it going to take to get back into this series? What's your theory on that?
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.